Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to Pit Pass Moto, the show that keeps you up to speed on the latest in motorcycling and brings the biggest names in motorcycle racing right to you. I'm Dave Selecki, and this week we are flipping the script, and we're going to talk to co-host PJ Doran.
This week in motorcycle racing, we had a World Superbike race from Jerez. The big news in World Superbike, of course, is the tooth and nail battle going on at the front between Toprak Razgat Lioglu and Jonathan Rea. Razgat had 1 point coming into this event at Jerez, and after two race wins, he was very happy to leave the event with a 20-point lead over Jonathan Rea. We've got three rounds left in this season of World Superbike, and it is going to come down to the wire, barring someone getting injured. We hope that does not happen. It's been an incredible season. Jonathan Rea, of course, a perennial favorite, multi-time champion. Razgat Lioglu absolutely asserting himself in this series. It is just going to be exciting. I can't encourage you more. Watch the final three rounds. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, it sounds like a real dogfight, and it's great to see. I love watching World Superbike, man. For off-road racing, we had the Motocross of Nations this last weekend in Mantova, Italy. And it was a mutter. They had a very wet and challenging event. But for me, the highlights was watching Jeffrey Herlings win two motos. The guy, the bullet, they call him, was on fire and really held up his country well for Netherlands. But really, for me, the story of the weekend was Italy winning the event, taking home the Chamberlain Trophy, and Antonio Cairoli finally winning that event. He's never done that well there. He always has bad luck at the Motocross of Nations. So it was good to see, because he did announce his retirement this year. For him to go out on top like that is, that's big news, I think.
Absolutely. You can't be happier for a guy that's certainly worthy and finally got his just dessert.
Yeah, I agree. And the other big news about the Motocross of Nations, it is coming back to the United States next year. They're going to have it at Red Bud, Buchanan, Michigan. It'll be in September like it always is. So at least next year, we'll have a U.S. team representing, so they can run the American flag and go up against the world. I'm really looking forward to that event.
Yeah, are you planning on attending that one, Dave? That's one I could see myself going to, getting an RV and camping out for a while.
You know it. I am going to start looking for tickets and hotel rooms now, because I want to get up there and watch that. Also got some results from the GNCC this last weekend. Stuart Baylor's been on fire all summer. He's really been a surprise for Yamaha, and to see him win XC1 again and actually take the points lead. He's got a point up on Ben Kelly, so good on Stuart Baylor. And he did his now famous backflip at the finish line, where he flips the bike over after he passes the checkered flag. It's pretty funny to watch, but he does it whenever he wins. So it's entertaining, and he's just full of life. In XC2, Jonathan Gourier just continues to dominate that class. So some really good racing in GNCC. If you get out and check it out, man, it's a great time. This week's Pit Pass trivia question is, it's known as the Olympics of motocross. What year was the first Motocross of Nations started? And name the country where it took place. And for bonus points, what country won that first event? The answer to that question after our interview with PJ Doran.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the show. My partner in crime here at Pit Pass Moto, former racer, industry guy, and monkey bike wheelie master, PJ Dorn. How's it going, bud?
Hey, doing great. Thanks for that intro, Dave. Far better than I deserve, I must say. Doing well. Good to talk with you about myself. One of my favorite topics, I must admit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure you know the material well. I know you worked in the industry for quite a while, but kind of step back to the beginning. When and where did you first fall in love with motorcycles, and where did it begin?
It takes photographic evidence, fortunately gathered by my mother, but I believe it started before the age of one. My father was stationed in Hawaii at Schofield Barracks during the Vietnam War, and my mother and I were living there. He had a Bridgestone two-stroke that are notorious, if anyone is familiar with them, for not exactly running, so it was generally in pieces in the parking lot outside of the apartment that they had given my father, and I was often captured sleeping on it. My mom has a whole album involving me sleeping on the gas tank at a very young age, draped over it, while my dad was in some form or another rebuilding it.
Now, that Bridgestone motorcycle, that didn't happen to have Lucas ignition, did it?
I assume it did. Bridgestone was popular brand, apparently, in the 60s. Dave, I remember riding one as a kid in the 70s. Somebody I knew had a Bridgestone 90. Likewise, to my dad's example, it was pretty much always in need of some form of repair. It didn't run for us very well at all.
I think that's how we all kind of became motorcycle mechanics over the years, owning motorcycles like that required a lot of work.
Or at least being around them, right? It was oftentimes, I was the guy who could fix them, so I got to ride bikes that I didn't get to own because I could actually make them run, and I think you're exactly right. It was out of necessity.
So tell me, which was the first motorcycle that you perfected the wheelie on?
I would have to say that was a Trail 70. I really started working out the kinks on some of my cousin's Trail 70s. As we all know, they were ubiquitous across the country. Every farm or barn seemed to have one, two, or three of them. No different within my farming family. Every generation before me, apparently, had a Trail 70. I never got to own one, but I certainly got hand-me-down rides. And if I could make them run, same rules. If you knew how to clean the carb and you found it in the barn, you could ride it.
So from there, I think, eventually you worked your way into the industry. And I know I'm probably leaping way ahead, but somehow your love of motorcycles routed you into the industry. How did you end up here?
Yeah, definitely. Growing up on motorcycles is absolutely at the core. My dad went from that Bridgestone, thankfully, when he got stateside. And as we grew, the family grew, he transitioned into BMW. So I've had a longstanding love affair with vintage BMWs. They were current at the time my dad was owning them, but now considered vintage. All of that led to the first thing I wanted to do when I got my own money, and as it turned out in the military, I was able to buy motorcycles. That leads you to motorcycle dealers. Once I was at dealers, I realized real human beings worked there, and I made it my goal. At some point, I had to work at a dealership, and I was able to start doing that when I lived in Minneapolis in my mid-20s. I worked for a, at the time, very popular dealership called Trackstar. They went on to infamy with some very serious shenanigans pulled by the owner of the business. Fortunately, I was long gone before felonies were handed down, but I did work there for a while at Trackstar, and it gave me a taste for what could be a career in the motorcycle industry as a mechanic at the time.
So formal training in mechanics, or was that something, as you said, you kind of picked up as you went, as you were younger, and obviously qualified to do that?
Yeah, mechanics work really, I think, stemmed from necessity. Again, my dad was constantly testing me as we were, he was a thrifty guy. So we always had vintage cars, vintage motorcycles, and I was constantly put to task. Can you make this thing work or that thing work? And next thing you knew, I was a mechanic. I came to college after the military and I owned my own series of junky cars that needed attention, and I gave it to them. And ultimately, occasionally, there are things you can't do. If you don't have all the right tools, which a poor college kid doesn't, I found a local import garage to work on my various Volkswagens when I couldn't tackle the task. And I usually could tell them what was wrong. I didn't have the tools. Can you guys do this? And they hired me in pretty short order. They said, you know what you're doing. Why don't you come in and use our tools? We'll pay you to do it.
And as I understand, that was a long career in the dealerships from there. I mean, you've gone from several different ones since then, or?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, I've bounced around from automotive. You know, I started in a European import garage at Iowa State, then Minneapolis. I worked at a Yamaha Moto Guzzi / Bimota dealership. Worked on a lot of things and got my start racing, doing some flat track up in the Minnesota area. Then I ended up at various garages in Chicago. Whenever I needed to make a buck, if I didn't have a job, I would usually pull my toolbox to somebody's garage and offer a hand, leading to my most recent 9+ years at a big-time Yamaha dealership here in the Midwest for Bart Hicklin at Hicklin Power Sports.
And that's that was your final stop, at least most recent final stop, I know.
Absolutely. I was the service manager there and oftentimes a technician in the early days when we didn't have enough technicians as we were growing as a dealership. It's hard for dealers all the time, even now, to get all the talent you need under one roof. So being able to switch hit and do a couple things certainly helped me in the industry and any job I've taken, and certainly is also what led to my involvement with Pit Pass.
Okay, that was one of my questions down the line, and I wanted to touch on, because you mentioned racing. So you've spent some time on the racetrack. You've self-admitted you've got the disease, like a lot of us do. Tell me about your racing history and kind of where that that led you.
Yeah, that first race, first organized race, let's say, because I was constantly racing people on my motorcycle. I won't count the entire lifetime of trying to outrun every guy at a stoplight. In an organized fashion, flat track in Minnesota was my first go at organized racing, and I did really well, better than most people on the very first day they sit on one. I was competing for the lead in amateur races, certainly at local dirt track. But that gave me an idea that I might want to do more of this. That leads to needing more money. As we know, racing is far from the cheapest thing you can do. It's terribly expensive at every level. So I got a little more serious about work so that I might indulge racing, and ultimately led me to doing track days on road race bikes and then road racing with WERA, amateur race organization here in the U.S. and did that off and on for quite a few years and loved every minute of it.
As we all tend to do. Now, I know you're a racetrack rat. You love to go, and you're known for your wheelies, but you're also known for your cooking ability. So I want to know, what's your favorite, your best trackside meal that you can prepare?
Well, the ones that I can prepare, I think that people have been misled to think that I cook. There's always food at my campsites. I have a awesome habit of surrounding myself with great cooks. So people think I can cook because I'm really good at invitations. I'm the socialite. I generally go around and make sure everybody knows we're going to have food at our site. I will take very little credit for it. It's generally the people I'm camping with. When left to my own devices, we get hamburgers. That's pretty much what we get, is hamburgers on the grill. My favorite meal at the track is prepared by one of my friends, Mark Peroni, and he makes the world's best low country boil trackside. He brings out the turkey frying pot and fills it with water and does an absolutely amazing low country seafood, potato, crawfish, whatever he's got, he throws it in there, and it's amazing.
I'm getting hungry just listening to this. So that's your trackside stuff. Now, I always wanted to ask you this question. When you're not spinning laps around the neighborhood or doing wheelies, what are your hobbies? What do you do besides motorcycles that fill your time?
That's a good question. I am an avid skateboarder, and as luck would have it, Des Moines, Iowa now has the biggest and best skate park in the nation. So recently, as in this year, I am now skateboarding a lot more than I had in 5 or 6 years, and I'm really enjoying it. Hopefully, I don't hurt myself too badly. I'm pretty much constantly covered in scabs now, knees and elbows, much like motorcycle riding. The joints are not appreciative of the impacts with the concrete, so I'm slowly finding out what I can and can't do, given my age and disability, so to speak.
as we all do. We all age, and it takes longer to heal every time we get off, that's for sure. And I'm sure helmets are required. At least I hope so.
I'll be honest. They're not required. It's much like skate parks around the country. They're all run pretty much the same way. Cities generally own them. There's a generic waiver at the gate. You're on your own. That's the only way they work. Otherwise, lawyers are going to come in and take them away before they even get started. So, yes, I have helmets. Yes, I have worn a helmet. As my comfort level grows, I'm not, and that's a bad idea. So whoever's listening, wear your helmet to the skate park.
Couldn't agree more. And one last question was, you touched on it earlier, which was your path to Pit Pass Moto. How did that begin for you? How did you get invited on? How did that come about?
Well, back in the grand old days, long time ago, it's probably been 10 years now, Tony Wink and I met fortuitously. I moved to town. I was, at the time, very active road racer, and I had purchased a flat tracker. I was getting into racing here locally in the Des Moines, Iowa area. Impossible not to run into a guy like Tony Wink, who owns a racetrack, is an incredible racer. And I began working at Hicklin Power Sports. He was shopping for sponsorship dollars for Pit Pass. At the very same time he and I were meeting, so he encouraged me to join, and it was an immediate good fit between he and Scott and I back then. I filled in some holes. Tony, as we know, is a brilliant off-road guy and had all the connections off-road, didn't know much of anything about road racing, and he admittedly would say it showed in his commentary and interviews. So it was a good fit to bring me in, and I continue to try and fill that role now.
As you do, absolutely. And it was great hearing some of the story behind the story, PJ. Appreciate you taking some time with us today. And is there anybody you want to give a shout out to?
I want to give a big shout out to my co-host, Dave Selecki, for getting on here and doing this with me.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for spending time with us, PJ. This has been great.
Right on.
This week's Pit Pass trivia question is, known as the Olympics of motocross, what year was the first Motocross of Nations started, and name the country where it took place? For bonus points, who won that first event? And the answer is, of course, it was 1947. The initial race was held at the Wassenaar Track in Holland, and that first event was won by Great Britain.
Great Britain, a powerhouse of the day.
They are, and they've won probably more Motocross of Nations than any country. The United States had a run since about 1981, but they've fallen off and obviously didn't attend this year. But they're always a force to be reckoned with, just because Motocross has really grown in this country since about 1970.
And did you say what year was that the first one took place?
1947, so it was after World War II.
Right after the war, yeah, that's impressive.
Yes, sir. Well, he had a lot of servicemen looking for things to do, and they all picked up motorcycles as a way to, you know, as a hobby, much like ourselves, actually. And, you know, they eventually, once you get two motorcycles together, what happens?
We got a race.
We have a race, absolutely.
Coming up in the motorcycle race world, we've got the MotoGP of COTA, Circuit of the Americas, Austin, Texas, October the 3rd. World Superbike will be happening in Portugal, October 1st through the 3rd, and American Flat Track will be holding their event at the Charlotte Half Mile on October the 8th.
Look forward to that event. In off-road racing, we've got the MXGP of Germany, round 11 of 18. That'll be October 3rd. And then GNCC racing round 12, which is 12 of 13 rounds, is going to be the Buckwheat 100 in Newburg, West Virginia, October 9th through 10th.
Thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to follow us on your favorite podcast app so you never miss an episode. And if you have a moment, please rate and review us as well. We really appreciate it. Make sure you're also following us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and visit pitpassmoto.com, where you can check out our blog.
This has been a production of Evergreen Podcast. A special thank you to Tommy Boy Halverson, Chris Bishop, producer Leah Longbreak, and audio engineer Eric Coltnow. I'm Dave.
And I'm PJ.
And we'll see you next week.
Wheelie on.
is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.